Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Nun Chen Amud Bet by the two dots. Amar Rav, Mekel Adam Kol Gufo Bitar. One is allowed to remove the hair from their body with a razor, as the Mefaresh points out here and become more evident in the Sugya, Vein Bo Mishum Lo Yuvash Gever Simlat Isha. And one who does that is not in violation of the Isur Doraita for a man to wear the clothing of a woman or mimic the practices that a woman normally undertakes. Meitave, is that really true? Hamavir beta shechi ubeta erva, one who removes the hair that is under their arms or removes their pubic hair, harizeh loket, that person gets malkot. So here we have a braita explicitly saying that the removal of the hair in these areas is problematic. Gemara answers, habitar habimisparayim. Depends how you do it. If you do it with a razor, that's what the braita was speaking about, and there it is restricted. Habimisparayim, Rav was speaking about using scissors. If you use scissors, then it is permitted. My says, Va Rav Nami Bitar Kamar. Didn't Rav explicitly say that you are allowed to remove the hair with a tar? So how can you explain that Rav means with misparayim? He says, Ke'ein tar. When he said a razor, he didn't mean literally a razor. He meant something that can simulate the close cut like a razor. Not exactly like a razor, but similar to a razor. So even if he cuts with scissors and does the cut very close to the body, it's still permitted as long as he does not use a razor. Now, based on the girsa that we have in our Gemara, the conclusion from this would be different for different areas of the body. That means that if it was not the Beit HaShechi and Beit HaErva, then Rav would believe, and similarly the Gemara and the Braita would be okay with one using a tar. That means that you can use a razor on the arms, on the legs, anywhere else on the body besides the Beit HaShechi or Beit HaErva. When it comes to the Beit HaShechi or Beit HaErva, there we have the differentiation that is made by Rav in the Braita, which is if you use a tar, a razor in that location, it would be asur. But if you used misparayim, if you use scissors in that location, then it would be fine. And that's the way that our Gemara reads. And the remainder of the Gemara will be influenced by how you read this part of the Gemara. There is an alternate girsa that is brought by the Geonim. You can see that in Ein Mishpat Ner Mitzvah. He quotes it in the name of the Rif. Tosafot on Nun Tet Amud Aleph. In the Tosafot HaGavra, if you look towards the end of the narrow lines, about five lines up, Tosafot also quotes it in the Shem of the Bahag, that there was an alternate girsa which incorporated some of the upcoming Gemara. We're going to read the alternate girsa because then it produces a very different answer than what we just summarized now. And that is, if you look in the Ein Mishpat Ner Mitzvah, he's quoting from the Rif, Meitevei, Hamavir Beit HaShechi Beit HaErva, Hari Zeh Loket. So similar to our Gemara, Rav's statement, which says that you're allowed to remove the hair of the body with a razor, they question that from this braita. The Gemara then answers, Ki Amar Rav Bishar Aivarim. When Rav said that, he was talking about the other limbs of the body. Aval Beit HaShechi Ubeit HaErva Lo Amar. But he did not include the underarms and the pubic hair. That was not what he was addressing in his statement. Bishari varim mishari. And then the Gemara goes on to question Rav's position with regards to the remaining limbs of the body. Is that really mutar? Vatanya. Don't we have a braita? And this is a braita in our Gemara that will be brought up in a different context, which says, Havarat seyar, eina midivrei Torah, ela midivrei sofrim. The braita says that the removal of the hair of the body may not be a restriction mina Torah of lo yubash gever simlat isha, but nevertheless, it's still restricted midrabanan. And now the Gemara answers, ki kamar Rav bimisparayim. When Rav said his position, he was stating with regards to scissors. V'chitanya hahi bitar. That braita was speaking about using a razor. And then the Gemara continues to ask, well, didn't Rav say tar? And the Gemara answers, ke'ein tar. Now, according to this alternate girsa, there are actually three steps in the Gemara as opposed to the two steps in our Gemara, and that adds on an additional isur here. And therefore, the conclusion from the alternate girsa would be that, number one, when it comes to Se'ar Beit HaShechi Ubeit HaErva, not only is it restricted b'tar, with a razor, but it's also restricted b'misparayim. When it comes to the remainder of the body outside of the Beit HaShechi Ubeit HaErva, over there, it would be restricted bitar, and that's what the braita was speaking about, that there's an iser midrabanan to use a razor on the remainder of the body outside of the Beit HaShechi Beit HaErva. And that's where Rav made a statement that it's mutar being bin misparayim. So according to this conclusion, you could use scissors on the remainder of the body, as opposed to the Girsa and Gemara, where you could use a razor on the remainder of the body. And when it comes to the Beit HaShechi, Beit Erva, according to this Girsa, you would not be able to cut it at all. That means not with a razor, nor with scissors. Whereas our Girsa in the Gemara allows you to use scissors and agrees that you can't use a razor. So there is a big nafkamina between the two Girsa'ot, and it also will affect how you read the remainder of the Gemara as to, number one, who's arguing with whom, and what the questions are in the remainder of the Gemara, as we'll point out when we are reading it. Tosafot on Nuntet Amud Aleph, in explaining one of those situations, says V'chein Nira, that it favors the position of the Bahag rather than the Girsa that we have in our Gemara. So now the Gemara continues and says, Amar Bechir Ba'ava, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Hamavir Beit HaShechi Beit Arva, Luke, someone who removes the hair from under the arms and from the pubic area gets Malkot. Now, seemingly, Rabbi Yochanan argues on Rav. Rav says, Einu Luke. Rabbi Yochanan says, Luke. According to the Girsa of Gemara, it seems pretty clear that Rabbi Yochanan is arguing on Rav, whereas according to the Girsa of the Geonim, you could answer that Rav is not really arguing on Rabbi Yochanan, as we're going to see that the answer that the Gemara brings then could match up with the way that they're explaining Rav, which is Meitave. Is that really true? And here's the Braita that the Geonim quote in the earlier Girsa. Vrata Seyar, Inabi Divrei Torah, Elami Divrei Sofrim. The removal of the hair is not a Torah restriction, but rather only a rabbinic restriction. Gemara answers, My Loke, Nami Dekamar. That Loke that is mentioned by Rabbi Yochanan doesn't mean Loke Midoraita, rather Midorabanan. It only means it rabbinically. Now it's true, as Tosafot and the Rosh point out over here, that they could have brought a proof to Rabbi Yochanan from the other Braita, the Braita that they brought to question Rav, which is Hamavir Beit HaShechi Beit Arvah, is it Loke? That Braita is supportive of the position of Rabbi Yochanan. And they could have brought that Braita to support Rabbi Yochanan, and, in essence, asked the same question rather than on Rabbi Yochanan, but a stira between the two Braitot. But the Gemara favored bringing this Braita as a question on Rabbi Yochanan, answering it, so therefore the outcome will be that the Braitot do not argue on each other. Because when the Braita says Loket, it means now we can explain it as being Loket midivrei sofrim. And therefore the Braitot would not be in dissonance, because you can explain the word Loket in the first Braita as being similar to the way that we're explaining Loket in the words of Rabbi Yochanan, which is that it means midivrei sofrim below midivrei Torah, and then everything can be reconciled with each other. Now, based on the Girsa that we have here, then Rabbi Yochanan in the end says that when it comes to the Beit HaShechi and the Beit HaErva, that one gets Malkot midirabanan for cutting in those areas with a tar, which would go against Rav's position. And as Tosafot points out over here, Rabbi Yochanan af bimisperayim oser. Rabbi Yochanan over here, when he says his words, he's saying it both with a razor and with scissors. Umashmad Rabbi Yochanan paligad Rav. From here, it seems that Rabbi Yochanan is arguing on Rav, because Rav permits you to use scissors according to our Girsa in the Beit HaShechi Beit HaErva. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan does not specify tar or misperayim, and Tosafot reads that in Rabbi Yochanan, meaning that there is no permission whatsoever to cut the Beit HaShechi or Beit HaErva, and therefore Rav and Rabbi Yochanan are arguing in this instance. On the other hand, according to the Girsa of the Geonim, where Rav agrees that when it comes to Beit HaShechi, it would be impermissible whether you use a tar or bimisparayim, it's possible that Rav and Rabbi Yochanan can't agree. And you could even speculate within the Girsa that we have that Rav would agree with Rabbi Yochanan's position if it was a tar, but Beit HaShechi, Beit HaErva, that is asur midivrei sofrim and not midivrei Torah. And you could reconcile the words, except that in the upcoming Gemara in the Igad Amre, it seems that it's clear that Rav and Rabbi Yochanan do argue. And therefore, Tosafot over here seems to indicate that Rabbi Yochanan's statement is made even by Misparayim, which would put him in conflict with Rav, according to the Girsa that we have. Gemara says, Ikadamre. There are some that have the Gemara layout this way, which is Amar Bichir Ba'ava, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mavir Beit HaShechi Beit HaErva Loke, which is similar to the statement we had before in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. But here they add in, Mishum Lo Yubash Giver Simlat Isha. But here they quote the Pasuk and the Isur that you're in violation of when you do this practice. And as the Rosh points out over here, the Kaven Dekro Maiti, since they bring a Pasuk, Ama Lokemi Doraita, then the Malkot that we're speaking of here must be a Torah-level prohibition. If that's the case, now you're going to have a problem with the Braita that we quoted before, which says, Meitevei, Arvat Seyar, Eno Midivrei Torah, Hela Midivrei Sofrim Ho. So now there's a stira between Rabbi Yochanan and the Braita, which is the Braita saying that this din is only a din derabanan, whereas Rabbi Yochanan is suggesting that this is a din deoraito. Gemara says, Hu damar ki hai tano. He holds like this tano. Now the Gemara is going to bring a brand new Braita, even though technically the Gemara could have brought the Braita that we brought on the Amud Bet before, which is Amavir Beta Shechu Bita Varizeloket. And you have a Braita that does not qualify that statement and say that those Malkot are only Midrabanan and not Midoraita. And that Braita is supportive of Rabbi Yochanan. But the Balei HaTosafot over here say, that the Gemara wanted to bring another Braita that was not only supportive of Rabbi Yochanan, but was supportive of the Pasuk that he uses as the source for his Isur. And that would even corroborate more the words of Rabbi Yochanan based on that Braita, which is the Braita that says, Umar ki haitana detanya mavir beta shechu beta evar ze over mishum lo yubash gever simlat isha, which is exactly what Rabbi Yochanan says. Vitana kama, hai lo yubash gever my dorish be. So the other Tano, who believes that the Isur here is only an Isur midrabanan, not an Isur deoraito, for what does he use the pasuk of lo yubash gever simlat isha? My dorish be mi boy le ketanya. He needs it for this braita. Lo yekli gever alisha, my talmud lomar. In the pasuk, there is a restriction both on a man and a woman. But there's a restriction both on a man and a woman that a man's clothing may not be on a woman, and a woman's clothing may not be on a man. Im shlo yobash ish simlat isha, bisha simlat ish. If the restriction here is simply that a man should not wear women's clothing, and a woman should not bear a man's clothing, the Torah describes this practice as a toiva. And when you talk about toiva, the Torah associates the word toiva with mitzvot or items that are extreme. It uses the word toiva with regards to arayot, and it uses the word toiva with regards to avodah zarah. So over here, the practice of putting on the opposite sex's clothing doesn't seem to qualify in either of these areas. And therefore, the Tana Kama says that if you just simply wear clothing of the other gender, that should not make a difference, or that should not be called toiva, ben kan toiva. Ella, what must be the explanation here? Ella shlo yibash ish simlat isha, that a man should not wear woman's clothing, v'yishev ben anashim, and then use that as a guise to sit amongst the women. The Mifresh over here says, Shiesh lachush mishum yichud, because that could generate a problem of yichud. The Rosh is more explicit, Kadei liznoti mehem, to perform znut with them, because that's where the word toiva is used. Visha, simlat ish, and a woman should not wear man's clothing, v'teshev ben hanashim, and saying amongst the men, again, for the, according to the Mifresh, the problem of yichud, according to the Rosh, the problem of znut. And this is actually the interpretation that Rashi brings on Chumash for these psukim, that the problem here is a problem of znut, and that the restriction is only a restriction in utilizing this type of clothing in order to do something deleterious. On the other hand, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov argues on this position and seemingly is supportive of the bright that we saw before, as well as the words of Rabbi Yochanan. Minayin shlo teitzei isha b'klei zayin lemilchama. How do we know that a woman may not go out with weapons to war? Talmud lomar lo yekli gever alisha, that items that are normally worn by a man may not be worn by a woman. Lo yibash gever simlat isha, shlo yitaken ish bitikune isha, that a man should not primp himself like a woman does. And the way that the Mifaresh explains that restriction, shlo yikachov lo yiparkes bigdei tzivonim shel isha, that a person should not put on makeup, or remove some of the facial hair, or use some sort of mousse to paste it down, similar to the practices of women. And the Rosh adds in the additional item, which is, v'lo ya'avor beit ha'shechi u'beit ha'irva, that he should not remove the hair of the underarms or the erva, the makoma erva, which was a practice of the women of that time period where they used to, like today, remove their hair under their arms, but also remove their pubic hair. The Gemara speaks about it in many places, that was considered to be something that was unacceptable for a woman to have that pubic hair. And therefore, it was a practice of the women. And if a man does that, then he is simulating or emulating the women. And that is what's the restriction in the Pasuk, according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. So according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, it's to mimic any practice that is normally associated with women. That is problematic. And that's whether it deals with clothing or any other practice. And the same is true for a woman to mimic the man. And that is exactly actually where the Targum translate the Pasuk, by the fact that a woman may not wear the clothing of a man. He translates it based on what the Gemara has here, according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, which is that a woman may not go out with the weapon of a man. And over there, the Targum also adds in that a woman may not go out with a talit and tefillin, because that is a kli gever. That is something normally worn by men, and therefore it would be inappropriate for a woman to wear it. And over here, the Mefresh quotes, interestingly, historical precedent, saying, Zesh matzino b'Yael, ishit chever akeni. Shalorak told the Sisra b'klei zayin. How come Yael killed Sisra when he was running away from the battle with Barak and Devorah, that she invites him into the tent because her husband and Sisra had some sort of alliance, and therefore he sees this as a place of safe harbor, and then she ends up killing him. How come she didn't kill him with a weapon? Elok Mosh Demar, Yada liyated tishalechna, that she took the tent peg and killed him with the tent peg. Instead of giving the explanation, which was that was the only thing available to her, that was what was readily available to her, where he wouldn't suspect that she was doing something, the Mefarish over here says that it was intentional, that she didn't pick up a weapon, she didn't take a man's weapon to kill Sisra, but rather used something that was in the tent, something that was not a weapon that was used by men, because of this isur for a woman to take up the weapons of a man. Now, it's obvious here from the Gemara that contextually it would depend on the society in which one lived, and that these issues are not necessarily objective, but rather somewhat subjective, which is that in societies where this is the practice of men, or this is the practice of women, then it would also be permissible for a man and a woman to engage in those activities and not be in violation of the Isur in the Torah. It might be that the first women who act in this way, or the first men who act in this way, will be in violation. But once it becomes the norm, then maybe it does not fall under the restriction of Lo Yubash Gever Simlat Isha and Lo Yeh Kli Gever Al Isha. So the Rambam, who seemingly paskins like Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, in his explanation quotes that it's a toiva, because this was the practice of the Ovdei Avodah Zarah, to change the gender's clothing and to do things. Men do things like women and women do things like men. And that would open up the possibility that some of this might be somewhat quote-unquote objective, because the Rambam is saying that this was a practice of Avodah Zarah, and the Rambam notes this by other chukim, where we keep the practice no matter what has changed in the norms of society. And so that would make it a little more sticky how we view the restrictions that are being listed here versus the much more subjective view that Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov's statement is really about the social norms. And for that reason, the poskim are more reluctant to move the line quickly with regards to societal norms, because of the fact that he associates this gender switching as being something associated with Avodah Zarah, or maybe even with Chukot Ha'akum, things that the non-Jews do, where we're not allowed to emulate their practices, and that's why it's called a toivahi, because we said before that toivah is associated with Arayot, as well as with Avodah Zarah, and therefore, according to the Rambam, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov is using the alternate explanation of what toivahi is. Amar Rav Nachman ben Azir Mutar. Rav Nachman says, despite this restriction over here, which the Baal HaTos would say, Lavir Beit HaShechu Beit Erva, that removal of the hair from under the arms in the Beit Erva, that even though that's impermissible in general, according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, it would be mutar with regards to a Nazir. And that is, as Tosafot says over here, that since this individual at the time that he's being mitgaleach, shaving his entire head, it's not considered to be noy and a tikkun lisha, because he's doing it to finish off his nizirut, therefore maybe the cutting of the remainder of the hair under his arms, and the pubic hair would also be permissible because he's already cutting all the hair on his head. So if he cuts the other hair, it wouldn't be a part of a beautification process, but rather just considered to be a continuation of the shaving of his head for the Nezirut, and therefore it should be mutar according to Rav Nachman. Others suggest over here that this is during his Nezirut, that while he is a Nazir, he is permitted to cut under his arms and his Beit Erva, because the whole point of the restriction is that it shouldn't be done lenoi, to beautify oneself. But this Nazir, who's growing out his hair and becoming unkempt, he's clearly not interested in beauty, and because of the way that he is growing out his hair. And by doing that, then it already offsets the restriction that would otherwise be there for the cutting of the area of the Beit HaShechi or the Beit Erva, because he has other items that are muchach, that he doesn't care about beauty, and therefore would be permissible for him to remove that hair. That's another possibility of explaining Rav Nachman. Or, others still explain, what Rav Nachman is saying is that even though a Nazir has a restriction to take off the hair of his head, he does not have restriction to remove other hair on his body. There's no Gzeira or Takanad the Rabbanan to remove the other hair on his body. The Gemara says about that, Belait Hilchato Kavate. The Halacha is not like that. And so there, according to the Balei Tosafot, even when he shaves his head for the completion of his Nezirut, he may not shave the other hair. According to the second explanation we gave, that means during his Nezirut, he may not shave those areas, even though he's growing out his hair, and it's not for beauty, it's still restricted. According to the last explanation that we gave, that even though cutting of one's hair is not permitted, the cutting of the other hair on the body would be permitted as a Nazir, that the Halacha is not like him, and that we restrict all cutting of the hair for the Nazir in order that he doesn't cut the hair of his head. Amarle Rabbanan the Rabbi Shimon bar Abba, Chazinale the Rabbi Yochanan deleitle. We're worried about the fact that we see Rabbi Yochanan does not have hair under his arms, and that means that he must be cutting the hair under his arms. And we know that Rabbi Yochanan, as we saw before, has a position that one is not allowed to remove the hair from under his arms, and that seemingly is with a razor or misparayim, and he says that you get malkot for it. So how is it possible that Rabbi Yochanan does not have hairs under his arms? So Amar Lahon Machmat Zikna Nashru, that because of his age, and we know that Rabbi Yochanan actually lived a very long time, that he spans over 2 to 3 generations of Amoraim, and since he is the prominent figure that's found in the Gemara Yushalmi, sometimes it's very hard to date certain Amoraim within Yushalmi as to which generation they lived in, because they all spoke with Rabbi Yochanan, because he lives such a long life. So we know that Rabbi Yochanan, first of all, lived a long life, and therefore it would explain why that he possibly, according to this explanation, lost some of that hair under his arms because of that long life. In addition, we also know that Rabbi Yochanan was beautiful. And Reish Lakish, when he first meets Rabbi Yochanan says to Reish Lakish, who at the time is the chief robber, says, Chelchale Oraito, your strength and that all your activity should put towards Torah. And Reish Lakish responds to him that Yofyach is Lenashim, that your beauty should be for women. And Reish Lakish, in describing the beauty of Rabbi Yochanan, describes him like a woman. And it might have been that Rabbi Yochanan had less hair under his arms to start with, because he looked, or he was both similar to the beauty of a woman, and therefore he was less hairy in that sense. And maybe that's the reason also that Rabbi Yochanan didn't have hair under his arms. But what's being made clear here by the Gemara is that it was not actively removed, and that's why it wasn't an issue that the Rabbanan shouldn't worry about Rabbi Yochanan or suspect Rabbi Yochanan of doing something wrong. How did Chayev Negida Kamed Rabbi Ami? There was this individual who was Chayev Makot, and seems to be Makot Mardut before Rabbi Ami. Igle Beit HaShechi, as they were removing his shirt, his upper garment, in order to give him the Makot, they saw his underarms, Chazi Delomi Galeach. They saw that he did not shave that area. Amalon Rabbi Ami Shivkua, leave him alone. Dein min chavrayahu. He is from amongst the Talmidei Chachamim, amongst the Chavirim. Rabbi Ami saw in the fact that he didn't shave his underarms, seems according to this, was the common practice of people at that time. And whether it was so common that it might have actually been permitted, and despite the fact that it was permitted, he still was nohei gisur, and Rabbi Ami is complimenting that, which obviously would have implications, the halacha, that even though the societal norm had changed, there's still something to be said for not shaving that area, or whether it was the practice of many people, but not necessarily a societal norm, but it was definitely not the practice of the Talmidei Chachamim, who did not violate this Isur. And when he saw that he didn't shave his arms, he knew that he was a Talmud Chacham. Therefore, he said to leave him alone. And not to say that that got him out of the punishment, but generally, Makut Mardut are given for someone who's not complying with the words of the Chachamim, or someone who does not listen to the Chachamim. But over here, we see that this individual took seriously the words of the Chachamim, because his practice was to not shave under his arms. And therefore, he wasn't necessary to give him Makut Mardut, because whatever he did must have been an exception to the rule, not the norm of his behavior. Or you can argue already the fact that he said he went down the path of being embarrassed and taking off his shirt, that was sufficient type of makot margud for this individual to realize that he had done something wrong, and that once he saw that he was a Talmud Chacham, he didn't need to push forward to punish him more severely in order to comply with the words of the Rabbanan. Now the Gemara asks a question from Rav from Abchia, and how you read this Gemara is going to be influenced by the Girsa that we had before, which is by Minei Rav mi Rabbi Chia. Rav queried of Rabbi Chia, Ma'ol legaleach? What is the din with regards to cutting? Now the question is, cutting of what? So the Mefaresh writes, Ma'ol legaleach b'misparayim beit ha-shechi. Is it permissible to cut the underarms with a scissor? Amalei asur. He says back to him that it was asur. Now, according to the Girsa that we have in our Gemara, if that is true, that Rav was asking about misparayim, he was asking about cutting with a scissor, and then Rabbi Chia says it's asur, that means that Rav, according to the Girsa in our Gemara now, is arguing on his Rebbe, Rabbi Chia, his uncle and his Rebbe, Rabbi Chia, but Rabbi Chia says you may not cut those areas with misparayim, and the way that our Girsa reads in the Gemara, you're allowed to cut with misparayim in the Beit HaShechi, and that would be strange. So, therefore, Tosafot says, according to our Girsa in the Gemara, the question of Rav is not whether you can cut under your arms with misparayim, but rather a question of whether you can cut under your arms bitar, with a razor. And Rabbi Chia says that it's asur to cut with a razor under your arms. And then Rav would have the same opinion, according to our Girsa, as what Rabbi Chia suggested. He asked Rabbi Chia about a razor under the arms, and Rabbi Chia said asur. And according to our Girsa in the Gemara, Rav agrees to that, that when it's used, done by a razor, it is asur. But if you used misparayim, it would be mutar. And that wasn't addressed by Rabbi Chia. Because according to the Girsa of the Geonim, who say that Rav restricted both misparayim and atar tachat beit ha-shechi, then this wouldn't be a question, because the question could be about misparayim. Rav was asking Rabbi Chia, okay, you can't use atar, but maybe you can use misparayim. And Rabbi Chia says, even scissors are asur. And according to their Girsa, that's fine, because Rav, in the end, says that under the Beit HaShechi is asur, whether you use atar or misparayim. Therefore, the way that the question is phrased by the Mefaresh seems to fit better with the Girsa of the Gonim. Because according to the Balei HaTosafot and the Rosh, it says, Ein Mefaresh de misparayim b'minei, Ela mahu legaleach bitar. Is it permissible to shave with a razor? And then Rav continues to question and says, Malei v'haka gadel, doesn't it grow long? Similarly, what Rav is asking over here is that when it grows long, it causes the person discomfort. And in order to prevent that discomfort, Rav is suggesting it should be permissible to cut the hair under the arms. And that's what the Rosh quotes in the name of the Rabbeinu Tam, Uperish Rabbeinu Tam, Vahaka Gadil Umitz Arile. It grows longer, and it's going to cause him discomfort. Vahoel Vesofuli Gadil Ulitz Aro. And since it's going to grow long and cause him difficulty, then when he cuts it off, he's not doing it to beautify himself. He's not doing it to simulate the way that a woman would act, but simply to remove the discomfort. So even when he cuts it earlier on, before it grows to the point of discomfort, it's only preventative in measure to stop the discomfort, not for the beautifying of the individual, and therefore it should have been permissible. That's what the Mefaresh says. When it grows long, it causes a lot of discomfort. So he responds to them, Amalei Barpachte, son of Talmidei Chachamim, son of great ones, Zman Yeshlo, Kol Zman Shehu Gadel Nosher, that there's a limit to the extent that it grows, that it only grows to a certain point, and once it reaches that point, because of the friction in that area, because of the nature of those areas, that hair will fall out and not continue to grow to the point where it reaches discomfort. Based on that, there's no permission to cut that area. Tosfot over here says that this seems to support the girsa of the Bahag and the Geonim, because if, according to our girsa, what was Rav's question? Rabbi Chia only answered cutting the Beit HaShechi with a tar, with a razor. But you could cut it with scissors. And if you could cut with scissors, then what is Rav asking him? Well, it's going to grow out long and be uncomfortable. You can just cut it with the scissors and be done with it. So this seems supportive, according to the Tosfot, of the Geonim's girsa, that both cutting with a tar and Misparim are restricted. And that's why Rav was querying of Rabbi Chia, what do we do now? Because this is going to leave us in a position where the person is going to be uncomfortable, and it's just going to continue to grow and grow. Rabbi Chia's response to him is, that's not the case. It won't grow to the point of discomfort, because there's a natural shedding of the hair that will prevent it from becoming or reaching that point of discomfort. But what you could conclude here from Rabbi Chia's statement, and that's what Tosafot says, is that if there was tsar, if there was something that was uncomfortable, then you would be permitted to remove the hair, because you would be doing it not for the purpose of noi, beautification, which would be the mimicking of what women do, rather it would be done for the purpose of preventing that discomfort. And that's the way that the Rambam paskins as well. Tosfot brings an interesting scenario, which he concludes from here. He says, Mashma, Shein Adam Mitzkavin Lenoi, Elin Netzel. If a person wants to do something, and it's not for beauty, but Elin Netzel, but rather to save himself from discomfort, the lip be mishum klegever, then it's not under this restriction. V'im kein. He says, from this you can conclude, Hamistakel b'mara, someone who looks in a mirror, Kedei shelo yachbo b'atzmo, so that he won't hurt himself when he is, for instance, cutting his hair or trimming his beard. Shari, it is mutar. V'chein omer haraf, sh'rabo harav reinu rabin shmol me'avira, haya mistaber b'mara. His Rebbe used to cut in a mirror so that he wouldn't cut himself or hurt himself. And here you see two things from the Balei HaTosafot. The first of which is that looking in the mirror to beautify oneself and primping oneself in the mirror is something that is restricted by this Iser Min HaTorah, because that's something that women do, is take care of themselves and make themselves beautiful in the mirror. That's not a practice of the men. And therefore, in general, one would not be permitted to do this in front of a mirror. Ella, there's the exception here, which is for cutting one's hair, where it would be dangerous or difficult to cut the hair without using a mirror. Or there we give permission for the mirror, because it's not being used for the beauty side of it, it's being used for the practical side of it, to prevent injury from the cutting of one's hair. Now, this is also similar to what Rashi quotes at the beginning of Parshat Vayeshev, when it says that Yosef used to act like a 17-year-old, that he used to do things that were, quote-unquote, teenage behavior, but similar to a woman, that he used to fix his hair and look himself in the mirror, mirroring something along the lines of what Tosafot is saying over here, that this was not a practice that was associated with grown men, that something that men would do in general, to look in the mirror. Obviously, it seems today that that is somewhat changed, that men, before they present themselves to the public or go out, want to look good, but the overemphasis of being in front of the mirror for a man would possibly be problematic because of, as Tosafot says over here, that's lenoi, that's to beautify, and it's just too much, which is a practice of a woman to spend much more time on these matters, and that if a man spends an inordinate amount of time in front of the mirror, that might start to mirror the activity of the woman, and it would be restricted by this Isur De'oraita. Then the questioning of Rav to his Rebbe, Rabbi Chia, continues and says, Bayir Meinei Rav, Mei Rabbi Chia, Mau Lachuch. What about causing friction for the hair to come off? What happens if you rub that area in order to cause the hair to come off? Amalei Asur. He says, that is Asur. And the way Mefarish explains, this is in the area of the Beit HaShechi. So if you can't use a razor and you can't use Misparayim, what happens if you just rub with your hand? Is that problematic? And Rabbi Chia answers in the affirmative that it is problematic. Bibigdo Mahu. What about if he uses a beged? He rubs in that area with a beged, and that causes some of the hair to shed. Is that permissible? Amalei Mutar. He says that is permissible. And over here, the way that Tosfot explains it, Mahu Lachuch Ulhit Chachech. Tosfot has a slightly different girsa. Simply to remove the hair from that area, as opposed to using a tar or misparayim, you use a hand to do it. That would be impermissible. And if you did it with a beged, mao, what would be the din? You would say that that is mutar, that is permissible. So they read it simply as dealing with any person. On the other hand, there are alternative explanations which say that this part of the questioning of Rav, of Reb Chiya, is not talking about a normal case, but rather suggests that this question is referring to a nazir and not to a regular individual. And that's found in the Aruch. And this would be a corollary to the rejection of Rav Nachman's suggestion before that by nazir it's mutar, and the Gemara said that the loch was not like him. So we see already that it's not permitted with misparayim. Now the questioning of Rav Reb Chiya extends that and says, "Well, mahu lachoch, mahu bebigdo, is the nazir allowed to use that?" So that's the alternate way of reading this. And then Iga d'amrei, some say that by minei b'tfilah, he asked of Reb Chiya, "Are you allowed to scratch those areas in tfilah?" These are what are called the makomot amizuhamim, that they have zayah that's associated with them. These are places that are normally covered and are somewhat dirty. And if you touch them during tefillah, you become unclean and you would have to wash your hands before you can continue in tefillah. But if you had something that bothered you, whether it's on your head or under your arms, and you had a beged, a piece of clothing over it, and you used that to rub that area, would you then have to wash your hands during tefillah? And the Rabbi Chiya says it's asur, because that would render you unfit for tefillah, because you then have to go wash your hands. And the Gemara concludes, V'leit hilchato kavate. The loch is not like Rabbi Chiya in this instance. The simplest reading of this is that this late Hilchot Kavate is only on the last statement made by Rabbi Chiya, which is that where he says it's Asur B'Tfilah, the Gemara says that it's not Mutar. But if you look in the Tosafot, the last line in the Tosafot says, V'late Hilchot Kavate, with regards to the first statement of Rabbi Chiya, where Rabbi Chiya says that to rub with your hand cause the shedding of the hair is Asur, Tosafot over there says, Amalei Asur, V'late Hilchot Kavate. And then, over there, he says that the late Hilchot Kavate at the end of the Gemara is also modifying the first statement of Rabbi Chiya, and that is also rejected by the Gemara according to the Balei HaTosafot. So it's unclear as how far the late Hilchot Kavate goes back on the words of Rabbi Chiya. The simplest reading is just on the last Ika D'Amrei that is said here, but the Balei HaTosafot see it as being on the entire statement that was made by Rabbi Chiya. Okay, now, in the beginning of the Amud Bet, we start with the Mishnah. Meit Echad Mehem. This is going back to the Mishnah that started out the Perek. In the Mishnah in which we have two Nizirim, one of them became Tamei based on a witness account, and now we don't know which one of them is Tamei, and they have to deal with their situation together through a partnership. But what happens if one of them passes away? And then the remaining individual is now left to deal with the Safek on his own. What does he do? Am Rabbi Yoshua, Yivakesh Echad Min Ashuk, Shidur Kenegdo Binazir. He should find someone else in the shuk who's willing to take a neder nizirut and join him in this safek. What this individual will have to do is take a neder nizirut for 30 days, but condition his nizirut and say that if you are tamei, then my nizirut begins immediately, and now I'm a nazir for 30 days. If you are tahor, then my nizirut will only kick in 30 days from now, and I will start a 30-day nizirut in 30 days from now. And that way, he now has a partner to share in the korbanot, as will be explained now. Fomer, im tamei haiti, if I was tamei, meaning the original individual here who has the safei, hariata nazir, then you are a nazir miyad, immediately. Vim tahor haiti, if I was tahor, and I never had this tuma, it was the other individual who passed away who had the tuma, hariata nazir achar shloshim yom. Then you'll be a nazir in 30 days from now. Sofrim shloshim. And then they together count the first 30 days. Umevi'in kurban tuma v'kurban tahara. They bring a kurban tuma and kurban tahara to cover the bases over here. Because if he is tamei, based on the conditions that he said here, he would now need to do a tiglachat tuma. On the other hand, the individual who took the neder nizirut to help him out would have been a nazir in the first 30 days then. And he would need to do a teglachat ha-tahara. And as the Mifarej points out here, he would bring a korban chatat ha-of. Chatat ha-of is one of the korbanot of the teglachat ha-tuma. And a chatat ha-of is allowed to be brought ala safek. It's not eaten, but it is brought ala safek. And therefore, this individual can bring the chatat ha-of, misafek. And then they also bring an olah al-tanai. because an olah can be brought as a nedava, as a voluntary offering, and also as a chovah. So what they'll do is they'll bring a chatata of and an olah between them and create a tanai. As far as olah tov, which can also be brought as a voluntary offering, Tosafot over here says that do bring it, but the Gemara just didn't bother to tell you that. The Mefresh, on the other hand, says that you don't have to bring the olah tov because it's a doron ba'alma. It's just a gift and you don't have to simulate it. The Rashash suggests over here that the olat behema that you're going to use here will fill in for the olat tov, even though we don't find such a practice in other places. But nevertheless, since you brought an olah, it could also fill in for that reason. So you do not bring the asham that is associated with the tiglachad atumah because you can't bring it as a voluntary offering. And number two, it's not me'akeh. You brought the chatat of, you have something to which to do the tiglachad atumah, you can continue forward with it. With regards to the tiglachad atara, you're not going to bring the chatat behema, which cannot be brought ala safek, as well as the shlamim, or the shalmei nazir, will not be brought as well. And then the Mishnah now explains what will happen. Vomer, im anihu atamei, if I'm the tamei, kurban tuma shali, the chatat of misafek is mine, and according to Tosafot, also the olat of, the kurban tara shalcha, then the kurban tara, the olat behema that we brought, belongs to you. Im anihu atahor, if I'm on the other hand, I'm the tahor, kurban tara shali, then the olat behema that we brought is mine, because that'll be my tiglachad atara, the kurban tuma bisafek, and the chatat of we brought was just brought ala safek, and doesn't belong to either of us. It wasn't necessary. V'sofrim shloshim yom, and they count another 30 days, and then cut their heads. U'mevi'in kurban tahara. And then they bring a kurban tahara. This time they bring all the korbanot of the kurban tahara. V'omer, imani eti tamei, if I was tamei originally, kurban tumah sheli, the original kurban of tumah was mine, the kurban tahara shelcha, and the original olat behema that we brought was yours. Ze korban taharati, and this is my korban of tahara. V'im anihu hatahor, if I was the tahor originally, meaning that I wasn't tamei ever, korban tahara shali, then the korban tahara, the olat behema that we brought originally was mine. The korban tuma bisafek, and the chatat of we brought was bisafek. V'ze korban taharatcha, and now at the end of the 60 days, the korbanot tahara that we're bringing are your korbanot. Amarlo ben zoma. Umi shomeyolo shidor kinegdo benazir. Who's ever going to listen to this guy to take a neder nazirut in this way? And that's explained in two ways. The Mefaresh explains that who's going to listen to you to bring a safek chatat of when a person doesn't need to do that? Why is he going to get involved in bringing korbanot bisafek? Or as Tosfot says, someone who didn't intend to take a neder nazirut, why would he ever get involved in this type of neder nazirut? In addition to that, why, even if he was intending to take a neder nazirut, why would he then subject himself to the restrictions of nazir for twice as much time and only get credit for 30 out of those 60 days? Nobody's going to want to do that, and he's not going to be able to engage someone else to do this with him. Ella, mevi chatat of, volat behema. Rather, Ben Zoma suggests that this individual who now is alone and has no choice, well, bring a chatat of and olat behema, vomer. Im tamei haiti, hachatat michovati. If I am tamei, then this chatat is for my tiglachata tum'ah, and I will use the chatat of as the korban which I bring in order to allow me to continue onwards. V'ola nidava. And the ola that I bring now is a voluntary offering. V'im tahor haiti. If I am tahor, then the tiglachat I'm doing now is ha'ola michovati. The ola is my obligation for my korbanot tahara. Chatat misafek. The chatat I brought anyway was misafek, and that's exactly what it is. It has no bearing now. And then he counts an additional 30 days. Mivi korban tahara. And then he brings all the korbanot of a nazir tahor, all three korbanot, the olah, the shlamim, and the chatat. Vomer, im tamei haiti. If I was tamei originally, then olah harishna nedava. The first olah that I brought was a voluntary offering. Vizo chova. And now the three korbanot that I'm bringing now are all the obligatory korbanot to finish off my nizirut b'tahara. V'im tahor haiti, if I was never tamei, and the first time that I brought the korbanot, I was really tahor, then va'olah rishona chova, the original olah was an obligatory olah to finish off my nizirut b'tahara, v'zo nidava, and the olah that I'm bringing now is a nidava, v'zo shar korbani, And these are the remainder of my korbanot. I mean that the olah that I'm bringing now at the end of the 60 days is a nidava. The chatat and the shlamim that I'm bringing are to finish off the two korbanot that I didn't bring at the end of the 30 days. I only brought the olah then. Now these are the chatat and shlamim that I need to fill out. So Rabbi Yeshua nimsa zemi vi korbanotov the chatzaim. So Rabbi Yeshua says, how can you do that? Then this guy is splitting up his korbanot between the korbanot in the beginning, where he brings the olah, and then he brings the chatat and shlamim 30 days later, and he's dividing up his korbanot. How can he do that? Aval hodolo chachamim leben zoma. Nevertheless, the chachamim thought that ben zoma's logic prevailed, and that nobody's going to listen to this guy to do this. As well as we're going to see in the Gemara, that Rabbi Yeshua's question about chatzaim doesn't seem to be a real question. And therefore, the chachamim favored the position of ben zoma. Now, this Mishnah is qualified by the Gemara's question earlier, which is, who says it's permissible to cut one's hair when it's not necessary to shave off the entire head of an individual? And so we saw back there that many of the Rishonim and the Achronim believed that that question wasn't necessarily on the first Mishnah, but was on our Mishnah over here, which is over here, you're asking someone to cut his hair twice, and you're also asking someone voluntarily from the Shuk to come in and cut his hair twice, where he wasn't even entered into the Safek. So even if you think that the person b'safek has permission to cut his hair twice to deal with the safek, someone who voluntarily enters into this situation, why should he be allowed to cut his hair twice when he's not obligated to do so? Because if you do it as a din and nazir, it's permitted, whether it's a nazir b'tumar or a nazir b'tara. But if you do it when you're not obligated, then you're in violation of to takifu et patroshchem, and you have no assay of nazir to override it. And the Gemara says, then how come it's permissible? The answer that was given by Shmuel over there was b'isha v'katan. We're talking about a woman or a katan, and that would have to be true in our Mishnah as well, where we're allowing this to be dealt with in this manner, that we have to be talking about an isha and a katan, in order to allow for these multiple tiglachot to happen without being in violation of lo takifu et pat roshchem. So the Gemara asks on the position of Rabbi Yoshua, who says, well, then he's bringing his korbanot in halves, v'laiti. What's wrong with bringing your korbanot in halves, meaning doing lechatzim? Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, lo Amar Rabbi Yeshua, elo lechadeit ba'at ha-talmidim. Rabbi Yeshua's statement did not really have any strength to it. The fact that you can't bring korbanot over a span of time, there is no restriction in that, and there is no problem with that. And Rabbi Yeshua's response was simply lechadeit ba'at ha-talmidim, to sharpen the talmidim, that they should say back to Rabbi Yeshua, what's the big deal? And show support for ben Zoma's position, even though, again, Rabbi Yeshua disagrees. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yeshua said something in order to elicit a response from the Talmidim, to engage them in the halachic discussion. And therefore, even though there was no tokef or strength to his position, nevertheless, he said it in order to engage the Talmidim. The Mefarash brings something very interesting, and he says that, rather, Rabbi Yeshua's intent over here was to show the Talmidim that you can ask questions, and you can say things, even though others are going to poke fun of it, or make fun of you or embarrass you, that there's no such thing as a bad question. Asking questions is how, as an individual becomes enlightened and understands that which they're learning. And if one withholds questioning because they're too embarrassed to ask the question, in the end they won't know, and they won't learn properly. And so Rabbi Yeshua makes a statement which is seemingly ridiculous, in order to show the Talmidim that it's okay to say things that are not always perfect, and that are going to be made fun of or rejected by others, because that's the process of limud, and that's why it's important what Yeshua is demonstrating to Talmidim, that you're allowed to ask questions in such a manner. Now, the Gemara ends off here with a very cryptic statement. Amar Rav Nachman, Miley Avid Lei, Rabbi Yeshua, the Dakye, the Lolisru. What should Rabbi Yeshua do with the innards, the intestines, so that they don't go bad, they don't spoil? Now, you could see the question as simply another rejection of Rabbi Yeshua's position that you're not allowed to split up the korbanot into two halves. But the Gemara already concluded that he just did it, lechadeit ba'at ha-talmidim, so we're not taking it seriously. Therefore, the Mefarish over here suggests that Rav Nachman had not heard this conclusion of the Gemara, that Rabbi Yeshua's statement was simply lechadeit ba'at ha-talmidim, and therefore he brings a rejection of that position of Rabbi Yeshua. And he says to him, "My rotzei lasod b'bnei ba'ayim b'dakia b'hema atzniyam shelo yisrichu ad shavi shar korbanotav." So what does he want to do now? He's got to store the fats of his korbanot from the korban olah now in order to bring it together with the Chatat and Shlamim 30 days from now, how he's going to keep them from spoiling. And the reason that he picked the Bnei Me'ayim, because those are the first things to spoil, or they easily spoil. And therefore he said that to him as saying, how could that be a true claim according to Rabbi Yeshua? He doesn't have refrigeration, he doesn't have a way to store the Bnei Me'ayim until he brings the remainder of the Korbanot. And this is an alternate rejection of that position of Rabbi Yeshua. And again, the Mefarei saying that he hadn't heard already that Rabbi Yeshua's statement itself was not considered to be real, but rather simply, v'chadeit ba'at ha-talmidim. Then Tosafot brings an alternate explanation, which is that the chalev here requires tnufa, but you have to wait for both of the nizirim here to cut their hair in order to do this tnufat ha-chalev. And in waiting for both of them to cut their hair, then there's a distinct possibility that the chalev would rot in that situation. So the question of Rav Nachman on Rabbi Yeshua is, why do you have to bring someone else from the shuk in here? By doing that, you're actually going to cause the innards or the intestines to spoil, because then you have to wait for both of them to cut their hair before you do the tnufat ha-chalev. And it says, the Rosh says, tzarich la'acher tnufat ha-chalev ad shigachu shnehem v'nimtza she'asrichu ha-me'ayim. In that term period, the me'ayim will go bad. Tosafot rejects that answer and says that that's not really a question on Rabbi Yeshua. That's a question on everyone, because in a case where both Nazirim are alive, we do this misafik, and we do wait the Shtei Tegelei V'Hiot in order to do the Tnufa. Although Tosafot over there says maybe in that situation that it's necessary, because they're both here and we have to deal with the safek. So in that case, we will wait and hope that they don't go bad in that short period of time. On the other hand, in a case where you don't have to bring in a second Nazir, why bring in a second Nazir that's going to cause the possibility of the innards going bad before you do the tnufa? Those will bring third explanation, which he rejects, because he says it doesn't make so much sense talking about the akravat, the innards of the olah, for the tiglachot over here. But he says that that's not the ikar. You don't have to wait for that anyway, and therefore he rejects that explanation. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah at the bottom of Nuntet Amud Bet.